Okay, and this is really stupid, but it does help with audio editing just in case. I'm going to request a 1, 2, 3 clap. Okay. 1, 2, 3. No, you're supposed to. Damn it, you guys. Okay.
So you want us to all do it together? What?
Yeah, that's the point. It helps sync up the
Okay.
audio if something gets screwed up.
Okay. I got you. I got you.
1, 2, 3. Close enough. And welcome back to the Wagump. The Wagump. Shall it echo through the ages? Welcome back, everybody. I am Hungry Joe.
I'm Nibish.
I'm DK.
Yeah, one of those was nice. Yeah, thank you. He got the clap. All right, we got the claps down. Awesome. This time we will not start with sandwiches. Or will we? So, citizen David Watts posits, is chili a sandwich if you put it in a bread bowl? He fired that one through the tweeter.
Oh geez.
This is a philosophical question, I believe.
I mean, yeah.
Yes, it's a sandwich.
It is. Yeah. See, I disagree. Now, I know that this has been broken down 500 ways, but in my mind, the thing about a sandwich is no matter what it's wrapped or encased or whatever the hell it is in, you can pick it up and hold it and bite it. You can't do that with a bread bowl chili.
Watch me.
Maybe not with that attitude is the way it should have been put, but... Okay, all right.
I believe in the power of sandwich. It can be done.
I suppose at this point it's just more of a state of mind than anything else. All right, gang.
Good start.
Wow. Exactly. We're going to become known for it. There's going to be more Twins news to come, I think. We can get into things like free agents and, you know, arbitration and that in a little bit, but for now, in recent news, why don't we move to the upcoming Hall of Fame ballot? It's been called a weak class. Should we start at the bottom or should we start at the top? As in newbies on the bat?
Probably the newbies.
Okay, that's right. All right. Well, why don't we go with the Twins first? There's actually three on the ballot, and that's Torii Hunter, LaTroy Hawkins, and Michael Kadire. Are any of them going to get votes? Hunter probably will.
I assume Hunter will get a vote or two, but I don't expect, honestly, spoiler alert, I don't expect any of these guys to get enough votes to even carry over to next year.
Yeah, I'd be pretty surprised.
Well, I think the only one that's possible to go over to next year is going to be Hunter, right?
I would say Burley would have a chance more than Hunter almost, but
who?
Burley.
Oh, I thought we were talking about just Twins.
Oh,
yeah,
okay. No. I was gonna say that probably no one from this entire class is gonna get enough votes to go on to next year.
Any of them?
No. Okay. I mean, there's a lot of really good players, and it's crazy how many players there are from like the 2006 divisional series that marked the beginning of the real Twins postseason futility.
Okay, real quick, let's go down the list of the incoming class. It's Tim Hudson, Mark Burley, Torii Hunter, Dan Herron, Barry Zito, Aramis Ramirez, Shane Victorino, AJ Burnett, Nick Swisher, and LaTroy Hawkins and Michael Kintyre.
There were I did see a bunch of people on Twitter saying that if Nick Swisher gets like any votes, they should just burn the entire system to the ground.
No question.
I mean, he deserves more votes than Kadire.
Oh yeah. I mean, honestly, as much as I love the guy, Hawken probably should.
No, I mean, there's no
really get any
reason
votes.
To vote for a Hawken.
Well, especially when there's so many people on the back half that like still need to get in.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, okay. Out of this incoming class, is anybody, are any of them going to make the Hall of Fame? I'm
no.
going to say no.
Ever? No.
No.
Okay, and then the next question, are any of them even going to make next year's ballot?
I don't think so.
Yeah, okay. Well, if we're talking that, I would say, yeah. I mean, maybe you give Burley an outside
shot.
Yeah,
Burley, I would say, yeah. He's got enough mythology built up around him.
The rest of these guys.
If I had to bet, I would say that even Burley isn't going to make enough.
No, I mean, if you ask me, you know, make a call right now, does he advance this year? I would say no. But I would also say he's got the best chance of anyone.
He will absolutely get the most votes out of this class.
Yeah.
Without question, but it isn't going to be enough to get him next year.
Yeah.
Going up the list, Abreu's in his second year. He got 5.5% last year. Probably stay on the ballot, I would guess, right?
Probably.
Maybe. I know a lot of people are kind of like he's hovering right around that 60 range that gets people excited about yet. I don't really. It doesn't matter that much.
Range.
War.
Oh, yeah.
60.2.
Yeah. I mean, in that range, you almost have to do something more to get there. And I don't know.
He's got 288 home runs, so he doesn't get that, you know, pretty 300 there.
There's not much there that's really, I mean, he deserved a second look, but I don't know that he necessarily, I don't know that there's any real reason to, I mean, I'm more of a medium haul guy, I guess.
You're not a big haul guy?
Well, I mean, the Hall already has High Pockets Kelly in it. I mean, how important is the Hall of Fame actually? But
you're not a tiny haul guy?
No.
Tiny hauls?
Somewhere in the middle.
Okay.
Actually, with 60.2 WAR, also next up is Andy Pettitte. This will be his third year with 11.3% last year.
It sort of surprises me that he's hung around this long, actually.
Yeah, that's that true Yankee mystique, I guess.
A surefire Hall of Very Good guy who also was implicated in performance enhancing drugs and somehow
that everyone seems to have forgotten about. Yeah.
Like, they're looking for reasons to not vote in the best pitcher and the best baseball player of all time. Meanwhile, Pettitte, who did the exact same thing, but was much, 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 much worse at it. Just, I mean, he's not going to make the Hall of Fame, but it's weird that it's even a conversation.
Nobody ever talks about it with regards to Andy Pettitte, yeah.
And on a similar topic, with the most ballots, we're going up the list of who received the most ballots last year. Next is Sammy Sosa in his ninth year. He's at 13.9%. He's not going to break 20, is he?
No.
And it's all about those like 3 or 4 years, but he was actually like insane for those 3 or 4 years. I mean, he was
on the roids.
On the roids for sure, but he's the only person in history to hit 60 or more home runs multiple times.
True.
I mean, not that he necessarily deserves to be in the Hall of Fame, but again, it's one of those things where it's like this really arbitrary, like, oh, hey, we're really gonna punish you, but we're not going to care so much about this guy. I mean, is Sammy Sosa a much, much, much better player than Andy Pettitte? I think so.
Yeah.
Well, just in case. Yeah. War doesn't bear that out, just in case. 58.6.
But you see, there is where I think that he's a better player than Abreu. Higher peak.
Hmm.
The old peak versus longevity argument, eh?
Okay, moving on to one of the more debatable ones is Andrew Jones. Fourth year eligibility, 19.4% last year.
Yeah, you know, Andrew Jones is probably one of the more interesting names on this whole list to me.
Yeah, no doubt.
He definitely should get more votes than Torii Hunter.
I think, in fairness, I think he will.
Yeah, probably.
But I think the funny thing about him is he should, in my opinion, be in the Hall of Fame. He dropped off so badly, but you forget it.
But he was so good.
He was so good. He's probably one of the two or three best center fielders as far as fielding ever. And at his peak, he was an amazing hitter. Everyone remembers those last few years, but man, he should absolutely be in the Hall of Fame.
Fat Andrew Jones, part-time DH and for the Texas Rangers.
That's sad.
The White Sox, I think.
That's sad. Bad time.
Shoot, I lost my list. I'm sorry. One second.
Speaking of guys who are part-time DHs for the White Sox, how about Manny Ramirez?
Let's go ahead with Manny Ramirez, 28.2%, fifth year of eligibility. A lot of people say that's about where he's going to hover.
Oh, yeah. I think he's convinced everyone who's going to be convinced. He was such an amazing hitter, but also such... I mean, is he the worst fielder of all time? Or is that Sheffield? Canseco? Like, accumulation of...
Have you seen Delman Young?
He didn't get a lot. He didn't get to play long enough to accumulate that much negativity.
Well, you said of all time.
accumulated long-term negative.
You mean guys who, the worst fielder of all time, who actually got to play in the field for a lot of years.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, he hit the longest home run that I've ever seen, like, live. He hit one in the Metrodome upper deck. It was unbelievable. I've never seen somebody hit the ball like that. He could hit so well for so long, but man, he was just miserable in the field. And I mean, that's what he was.
I was gonna say, you guys leapfrogged, just going up the list, you leapfrogged over Jeff Kent.
He's going
into his eighth year.
Survivor player Jeff Kent.
Well, that'll garner him a few votes around here.
I mean,
you should have seen when he got voted off of Survivor. He said something about, at least Obama's not going to take my winnings.
And that gets to my point of, he is probably one of the better second basemen ever, and absolutely no one wants him in the Hall of Fame. Like, nobody, even the people who are voting for him, don't really want him there. They're just like, he was really good, I guess we'll vote for him.
Second base is such a weird position, you know, because...
It is, because if you're really, really good at fielding, you're a shortstop. And if you're a really, really good hitter, you're a corner infielder.
Right.
It's basically rejected shortstops who don't hit well enough to be third baseman.
Right. Crappy hitting third baseman.
Yeah.
Speaking of good hitting third basemans, Todd Helton in his third year.
What was he at last year, number-wise?
Well, now he's at 29.2%.
It just kind of feels like going back to, like, when we were doing the half-baked haul around here, and, you know, you put these guys in and a quarter of the people vote for them, and those same quarter will keep coming for them, but they're not getting anyone else. And I don't see any of these people that we're talking about getting really anywhere, because there's not going to be that ground support that there was for, like, a Bly Levin, or that new understanding that, oh, hey, Sammy Sosa did this one thing that no one really understood until just now. All these people are going to be around. They're never going to fall off the ballot, but they're going to be at 30 or 40 forever.
I heard one point, though, like a lot of, you know, the deadlock kind of got cleared out of the ballot in the last few years. So that means, you know, the field is a lot more open for voting. So maybe some of these guys are going to go up, but it doesn't seem like, you know, enough of these mid-tier guys are going to go up enough ever.
No. Well, we haven't talked about anyone yet who's going to make the Hall of Fame.
I would agree with that.
I don't think we will.
I should say that we haven't talked about anyone yet who's going to make it on the normal voting thing.
That's right.
Like Harold Baines is a Hall of Famer, so who knows?
That is a strange thing to contemplate.
One of the ones who make it closer would be next on the list, which was Gary Sheffield. He's in his seventh year, but he's only at 30.5%.
Sort of in the same category as Manny Ramirez?
And perhaps Andy Pettit, though much less so in his case.
Right. I still don't see how he'd get enough support.
Yeah, Sheffield is probably one I would pinpoint as somebody who's going to get a little bit more now.
He's going to get a bump, I think. He's going to get a bump.
Yeah.
A little bit, but I don't see it. He's one of the guys that I think he and Andrew Jones, specifically out of the guys we're talking about, will probably make it in, like, a veterans type thing.
Probably have the best chance to, yeah.
A later one.
Yeah.
I really don't see Sheffield making it to 75 either, though.
No, right. I don't mean that. Yeah. I just mean he could get up to, like, 40, 45.
Next would be Billy Wagner. He got 31.7%.
Well, if you really love closers.
Well, I mean,
he only has 27.7 WAR for his career.
Well, yeah, but I mean, you look at anyone who isn't Mariano Rivera, and they don't have that much.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, Eckersley is way up there, but he was a starter for a lot of years and a pretty decent one.
Again, yeah, so that means how many closers should be getting into the Hall of Fame? Besides, if your name isn't Mariano Rivera.
I think, honestly, barring some crazy shift in how things work, I think we've got enough closers in the Hall of Fame at this point.
Let Joe Nathan get a few votes and that should, you know, close the book.
Nathan will get a couple of votes. I don't see anyone now who will actually, like, I don't see any closers in the game right now that would, like,
no,
theoretically be Hall of Famers.
Not even Craig Kimbrell?
Craig Kimbrel at his peak is probably the most weirdly dominant pitcher ever, and he won't get more than like 3 votes. I see.
Not even Taylor Rogers.
Okay, he could. He could.
Not even the three-headed monster of, not even Kenley Jansen. I was going to say something else, but not even Kenley.
Gratterall.
Exactly. He's going to be like a 15-year, 40-save guy.
Now, anymore, like the relievers fall off the cliff so fast. I don't see any of them making it. I think Papelbon was probably the last closer that really honestly was going to have a shot at breaking the saves record. And that's about the only way that I could see anyone having a shot at the Hall of Fame now.
Devin yeah. Williams.
He's going to choke on getting into the Hall of Fame, though.
Devin Williams.
If he keeps up his, what, 0.33 ERA long enough? Yeah, he'll make it.
Okay.
All right.
That was bad.
Fair enough.
Scott Rolen. Scott Rolen is one that people are claiming is a borderline candidate.
That's a sleeper pick, yeah. That is a classic case of someone who's going to get under the radar stands arguing this case over and over and over again.
It's his fourth year of eligibility with 35.3% last year.
Well, now we're getting into the like interesting candidates, though. I mean, there are a lot of people who will actually go to bat for Scott Rolen.
In case, he's number 5 on the list of votes received last year.
You know, I mean, like Sheffield, he was great, but no one's really going to go to bat for Gary Sheffield. There are a lot of people who are going to go to bat for Scott Rolen.
Agreed. Yeah, he could take a nice jump. Yeah,
I think he will.
I don't think it will get him in, but he will take a nice jump.
He won't get in this year. I think he will get in eventually. I don't know if he'll quite make 75 by year 10, though. I think he'll probably get close.
Yeah,
but he's on a path that is very different from all the rest of these players that we've mentioned so far,
and probably most of the ones still to come.
Well, in fairness, yeah.
In a similar sense, next on the list is Omar Vizquel. He's probably going to get in, maybe not. Again, he's also in his fourth year of eligibility, but he's got 52.6% of the ballots last year.
Boy, Vizquel feels like a guy that has a hard ceiling to me, though.
Well, I mean, there's a reason for that, though.
Right. That's what I'm saying.
There's a very good reason for that. It is really hard to in the time of understanding advanced metrics go for a guy who didn't even clear 50 WAR and who his OPS was under 700.
Yeah, I mean, it's just people who, and I mean, it's obviously there's a lot of them, but the people who are just about he's the greatest defensive shortstop ever, except for Ollie Smith, I guess.
But he's not. I mean, the whole joke back in the day was that he was like a poor man's Ozzie Smith. Or,
right.
He isn't half the fielder like Andrelton Simmons is, and you don't hear, I don't think you're going to hear like everybody sitting there like going crazy for Andrelton Simmons.
I think there's going to be a big Andrelton Simmons push in about 12 years, actually. Yeah.
That could be. I would actually be more supportive of that than I would of Ozzie.
While we're living through the heat death of the universe, the stands on Twitter will be talking up the Andrelton Simmons Hall of Fame case.
I will be more supportive of that case than I will of Vizquel. I can almost guarantee it.
Yeah. But, as far as what more he's going to get, I doubt he's going to get much more than what he's got right now. But if you look at trajectories of a lot of people, you'd expect he will get in.
This is the first guy that we've talked about that I have no doubt whatsoever is going to eventually make it into the Hall of Fame. If he doesn't make it in as voted, he will 100% no doubt be inducted.
A veterans.
Oh, no question.
Committee pick, yeah.
No question.
Yeah.
All right. We're getting up to the 1, 2, and 3, but we're going to do the reverse of what we've been doing. We're going to start with 1 and then go to 2 and go to 3. Number 1 is Curt Schilling. 70% of the ballots last year. All of these 1, 2, and 3, it's showing Clemens and Bonds. They're all in their ninth year of eligibility.
Yeah.
So they're coming up to the wire. I guess with each one, the question is, are they going to make it into the Hall of Fame at all? And then two, if they do, is it going to be this year or next? Schilling. I'm going to say he makes it in. He makes it in.
Oh, great. We have to listen to a Kurt Schilling Hall of Fame.
I know really that was my exact thought. My exact thought was that. But he's going to make it in.
And
if so, is it going to be this year or next?
It'll be this year.
Boy, I mean, yeah, the problem is there's such a lack of people you can reasonably vote for on the ballot and say, well, I only got so many votes, guys. I got to vote for somebody.
I mean, we just established that, like, none of the newcomers are going to even clear 5%.
Yeah.
And Schilling is reasonably one of the 50 best pitchers ever, and he's got the 2001 World Series, and he's got the Bloody Sock game. And I watched the Bloody
His
Sock
Jack
game.
Morris moments. His Jack
I,
Morris right. moments.
I watched the Bloody yeah. Sock game. It was absolutely deserving of the myth. It was amazing.
It was an epic performance.
It was ridiculous. It was amazing. He is a world-class D-bag, and I wish no good on him at all. But
that's an understatement.
He probably won't even be the worst player and worst person to be in the Hall of Fame.
Well, at least Aubrey Huff will never make the Hall of Fame.
No.
Odds are stacked against him.
It seems unlikely.
It seems unlikely.
Two and three here are basically pitcher and hitter, but they're basically in the same boat here. It's Clemens and Bonds. 90 eligibility. Clemens had 61% of the vote, and Bonds had 60.7% of the vote.
I think they're going to spite him. I think they're going to go ahead and not vote either of them in, even though you have a strong argument that it's the best pitcher and the best hitter of all time.
Real quick. Besides all that, personal opinion, do they belong in the Hall of Fame?
Without question. Without question.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Okay. Absolutely.
You take the roids away from Barry Bonds, he was already on a Hall of Fame path. You take the roids away from Clemens, he was already on a Hall of Fame path. It just made them from being once in a generation players to being literal video game players. There were a lot of guys that juiced in the early 2000s. And Bonds was the one that decided to, that one year he got walked, 200 sometimes and like 100 and sometimes intentionally so that he only hit just about 50 home runs.
Real quick, all time Bonds had 2,558 walks. The next closest person, 1475 and 1476 respectively were Sheffield and Abreu. So over 1,000 more walks than the next closest person on this Hall of Fame list.
And he was a machine. He was a very, very unlikable machine, but who cares?
It's not the Hall of Nice Guys.
Well, I mean, Clemens, you could say the same for him.
So. Right. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they are basically opposite sides of the same coin. I mean,
if we just said Kurt Schilling's going to get in, even though he's a world-class D-bag, the only reason that we're talking about Barnes and Clemens not getting in is because of the steroid thing.
Right. Yeah, they're not going to let him in. I feel very strongly that they're not going to let him in. I feel very strongly also that they will eventually get in. They just don't want to give them the satisfaction of getting voted in that way.
Yeah.
I can see that. Okay, in a hard U-turn, and because we have about 4 minutes left on our Zoom session, it came up. I saw it over three nights because that's how long it took me to watch it. It's Rise of the Skywalker, right? Or The Last Skywalker? Rise of the Skywalker, right?
Rise, yeah.
Yeah, Rise of the Skywalker.
Rise of the Awakening Force Skywalker.
Yeah, that movie was hot trash. I'm apparently going on a tour of like movies I know are bad going in, and yet I still watch them. Like It Too was another one of those, and it was just awful. Oh my goodness, it was awful. Might have been more awful than The Rise of the Skywalker, but I was very disappointed because, yes, Last Jedi, I guess I'm team Last Jedi. I guess that's where the division is, right?
I mean, some people think they're both bad, which I think is a fair, I mean, it's a fair position if you honestly feel that way. I personally definitely think Last Jedi is okay to good, and I never saw The Rise of Skywalker because everyone said it was bad, so I don't have an opinion on that one.
My son is watching, he loves the Lego Star Wars shows on Netflix, or on Disney Plus, I guess. I can confidently say that the Lego Star Wars shows aimed at 7-year-olds are better than Rise of Skywalker. Quality-wise, I mean. Also acting. They're just better.
They're just better.
I mentioned this on the site, and forgive if I'm remembering this wrong. Please correct me, but half of the beginning of the plot was focused on getting that Wayfinder thing, right?
Yeah.
Giant sequences and getting it and all this, you know, humble and bumble to get it. And then, like, 5 minutes after they get it, it gets destroyed? Am I remembering that correctly?
You are. I don't remember much of the backstory of that because it's been about a year since I watched it. But yeah, it becomes a MacGuffin that takes like an hour plus and then serves absolutely no purpose.
That really summed up the entirety of the movie for me.
What really summed up the entirety of the movie for me was when we were leaving the theater and my wife was like, so I don't know that much about Star Wars, but none of that made sense at all. I'm like, yeah, no, none of it made sense at all. It is front to back, just fan wankery trash. But it's like trying so hard to undo mistakes that never really existed. Like, oh, hey, I guess spoiler alert in case you haven't seen it and really want to turn back now. But like, oh, hey, the last movie said that Rey wasn't anything. Oh, hey, no, she's actually Palpatine's granddaughter for some reason. That doesn't make sense, but sure.
And apparently they didn't decide they were actually going to do that until they were like, you know, well into filming the movie.
Well, that's the weirdest part to me, though. That's the weirdest part to me. Like, yeah. They went that far and like, wait, you didn't have a whole overarching thing?
No, they definitely didn't. I don't think they had anything resembling a plan from the beginning. I don't think they even had like an outline.
And that's what shocks me the most, to be honest.
I honestly think they went into it just saying, hey, let's redo the original trilogy beat for beat, narrative by narrative the whole way through. And the second movie didn't follow that, so the third movie overcorrected massively.
Ryan Johnson tried to do something else with his movie, and then they realized that some people got really mad about that, so they brought J.J. Abrams back to try to quote-unquote fix it.
Overcorrection to the extreme. Oh, and huge overcorrection. With that, we'll take a quick break.
The free agent stuff later. Yeah. That one is actually one that I do want to kind of like
work on that one a little
actual homework on, as opposed to like, yeah, the Twins should probably keep Blazevic.
Keep that guy. Actually, the only point I wanted to hit at all, if we did anything today, was please, the Twins don't sign Trevor Bauer. That's all.
God, no.
That's the only point I would want to hit.
No.
I mean, they're not gonna.
Obviously not.
You don't have to worry about it.
Yeah, I know. But just everyone keeps like, hey, Trevor Bauer. No.
They don't operate by going after the top free agent pitcher ever. They never have, and they never will.
Thank goodness. Well, seeing as how who just signed for $11 million again?
Drew Smiley.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Like Brad Hand can't find a job, but Drew Smiley picks up $11 million. What?
Somebody's been reading Mike Petriello's Twitter.
Actually, you know what? We started this. Yes. Okay, so Twins don't sign Trevor Bauer and Drew Smiley $11 million a year. That's weird.
Oh, and the Buster bomb the other day that there are four teams in on Jake Odorizzi.
Oh yeah, I saw that one
too. And the Twins are one of them, so there are three teams in on Jake Odorizzi.
There are three teams in on Jake Odorizzi. Yeah.
But anyway, if Smiley is getting that much, that makes the market look tricky, perhaps. At least for the Twins.
I think it just makes it look weird. I think it's still going to be really a depressed market. It just makes it look weird.
Maybe not for pitchers?
Well, okay, so part of that is that Stroman came off the table, and then
Gausman came off the table.
Gausman came off the table. So right there, two of your...
That's like two of the top five, right?
Yeah, I mean, like, that narrows things down in a hurry. I think that sent panic waves through
the Braves.
But they needed to panic. If there's a team, if there's a contending team that needed to panic, it was the Braves.
Yeah, agreed.
Because they ain't getting Bauer either.
No.
He was saying he still was considering the Reds as well, right? I mean, but he has to say
that. He's literally, I'm pretty sure he's got his hired team of graphic artists that have photoshopped him into literally every team's uniform at this point.
Yeah, that's true.
And he's got a ton of minions sitting out there going, posting those pictures in his replies like, please come to
Pittsburgh.
Yeah, he's totally going to come to the Pirates. I did actually see the Pirates on one of his replies, though, and it's like, yeah, definitely. Wow. You're Pittsburgh ace.
Okay, how about this? Where would you like him to end up?
Pittsburgh.
Pittsburgh, okay, that's a good choice.
The Mets.
Ooh, that's a good choice, too.
Oh.
I don't think they're going to, but I think they are going to open the money cannons, but I don't think they're doing it for Trevor Bauer.
No.
That was an interesting announcement, though.
Steve Cohen.
New owner. Yeah, talking up all big and bad, like, oh, hey, we're going to spend some cash, going to make it rain.
That's cheese. We're a New York team. We're going to spend like a New York team, man.
Dave and Bills.
Stacks on stacks on stacks. For the listeners at home, there was much of fingers across palms in a cash distributing motion. If you guys,
oops, this is audio only, guys.
We'll figure out the medium one of these days. I swear.
We need a sound effect for that. Cha-ching!
Ooh, I'll see if I can find one in post. Okay, wait, no, that would go above half baked, maybe not. Moving on. What is it? Is Thursday the deadline for the to lock in your 40-man roster to protect players from the 40 or the Rule 5 draft? I think it's Thursday, right?
Is it Thursday or Friday?
It's Thursday or Friday. Let's move on that operating principle. So I think if I figure this out correctly, the Twins are at 34 on their roster. Is that correct? Anyone?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. That sounds correct. Right.
Yeah, let's go with that.
It was as of last week, anyway. I don't think they've made
it. They haven't done anything since then. Yeah.
Well, who was it they picked up a few weeks ago?
They picked up a few guys a few weeks ago. But
Picked up
the old waiver wire pitcher hunting.
They're hunting whistlers.
Yeah, hunting whistlers.
Do they stay on the roster, do you think, or do they get cut?
No, there's no reason. I mean, they're at 34. There's no reason to, like, freak out.
Oh, yeah, right. I doubt they picked up anybody to add to the roster to cut them 2 weeks later. I mean, it's happened before, but I doubt it. I doubt in this case.
Well, and, I mean, we're about to go over that there's really only, like, at the very, very most, three people to add to the 40-man for the Rule 5.
Right.
Just an update. It was Ian Gibault, and Brandon Waddell who were added recently.
Correct, yeah. Ian Gibault.
Yeah, exactly.
Is most famous for...
Gibraltar?
No. Pete, you wanna explain why Ian... The former Texas Ranger is the most famous.
Guy Bout.
That's right. Yeah.
Guy Bout. Yeah. Okay. He's the one who threw at Machado after Tatis hit his grand slam
on a 3-0 count.
Yep. he's the one who threw that very, very old school pitch.
We need a clubhouse leader. So
we got one.
We got one.
All right, I am going to go off Seth Stowe's list on the Twins Daily of the givens to be added. That would be Alex Kirilloff to be added to the 40-man.
Nope, that was last.
I mean, he's already on it.
I think you're operating off last year's.
Am I? Oh my goodness, I could be.
Comes up first on the Google.
Considering he played in the playoffs, I bet Alex Kirilloff is already on the 40-man roster.
This is from 11 days ago. So
yeah.
Well, Seth Stoles is.
I can guarantee you that Kirilloff is on the roster, Rooker's on the roster, Larnach is on the roster.
Kalina.
Only absolute certain.
Larnach, I don't think Larnach is on the roster yet. I don't think Larnach is on the roster yet.
No, but he doesn't have to be, I don't think yet.
Look, anybody who played on the team this year is on the roster, obviously, unless they've already been cut.
Correct.
But, yeah, Larnach.
As far as I can tell, well, Larnach isn't required to be yet, I don't think.
Right.
But, I mean, it's kind of a moot point because I think we'll probably see him at some point this year.
Probably,
but
yeah.
I don't think for the purposes of the Rule 5, he will really be important. I don't think so. I don't think he's pickable.
Yeah, I'm going to go with you on that one, but I don't think so either.
The only one that I'm aware that is super critical would be Belazovic.
Belazovic, yeah.
Yeah, they might. I mean, and that's a no-brainer at 34.
Right.
It's an absolute no-brainer. The ones that were a little bit on the edge were like Badu, and if Javier, they split him by last year, but that was because he had just missed out an entire year, and he was so young still that there's no way that somebody's going to devote a roster spot to him all year.
Has
that changed for this year? He's got potential.
He's got potential. I can't imagine adding Wander Javier to the 40-man roster yet.
But he's the only other one.
I know, yeah. Well, I mean, I guess they have space to do it.
Badu, you do.
Bada bing, bada badu.
Whoa. I think you tried to slide Javier through again, truthfully. He hasn't played in what? It's been 2 years now, hasn't it?
2 years, yeah.
I don't think anyone's going to, you want him on the team, but no one is going to, I don't think anyone is going to devote a roster spot to him all year. Roster spots are just too valuable to hope that he's ready for big leagues at this point.
You don't think the Pirates might just say, what the heck?
I mean, they could. I know there were some people who were surprised that no one did it last year, but that's 2 years of no organized baseball at this point.
Yeah. Anybody else?
I not really. I mean, I didn't.
Is there any Griffith?
I'm going to continue to go off Seth's list here. His Badu was his number one to consider to add, and Rortved, the catcher, Ben Rortved. I'm not sure if I'm saying that right. That was his number two.
Is anyone going to pick up? I mean, I don't remember what Rortved was at this last year.
He was nowhere.
Well, yeah, no, but I mean, like the year before, I guess.
I think he was. High single.
Yeah, high single, did some double A too. Does anyone pick up a catcher who hit .239 in double A?
Well, catchers can be at a premium.
I mean, they can be, but can I mean. Be.
I mean, look what we traded to get JJR or whatever. I'm getting that name wrong. Who am I thinking? John Jacob Jingleheimer Smith. What was his name again?
Name is my name too.
Yeah, John Ryan Murphy. You don't say. Yeah.
Ryan Murphy.
That's the one.
Yeah.
See? We paid a plenty high price for him.
Yeah, sort of an anti Brzezinski.
Rortved did get up to AA last
year. Yeah, the year
last
before.
Year last. Last year as in 2019.
Actual
last year. Yes.
I think that the fact that there was no 2020 season really throws the Rule 5 into even more disarray than usual.
Yeah,
because
it's particularly volatile. Yeah,
because I mean,
okay, I'm looking at this. You have to have I'm looking at this set list that you're reading off of, and I understand why he was referring to his previous year's list when he said he was guaranteeing in January of 2020 that Kirilloff, Kalina, and Rooker and Belazovic would be added in November 2020 and obviously three of those four already have been because they all played in majors.
And I doubled. They all are on the 40 man.
At least two of them will probably play significant time in 2021.
Sure, but I mean, for the purposes of the Rule 5 draft, obviously they're already there and they're already got roster right. spots.
Okay, thank you. Right.
But that's what he was doing. He was looking back at his old article from January
I gotcha.
Talking about what he was predicting would happen, and 3/4 of it has already happened because they played in the majors. And I would agree with his fourth pick, Blazevic, as we've already said, will definitely be added also.
I mean, honestly, Blazevic is the only for sure. I think they'll put Bedu on there.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, after that. So in that case, who is there anyone else you want to put on there? Bedu is, again, his in the article. We'll put that link in the post for this just in case.
Yeah, glad we sorted that out.
Yeah. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Bedu is number one on his list. But he has a Rortved, or however you say that, second.
Yeah, I mean, catchers are a premium. I don't think anyone's going to try to snag somebody who batted .239 in AA 2 years ago.
I'd go ahead. I mean, now that I understand the context better of what we're talking about, and again, we're talking about they have six open spots, correct? And one of those will be Blazevic's. And assuming no other moves are made, which is possible,
one other one will be Bedu.
Right, one other one will be Bedu. So we're talking about four spots left. Now there are guys on the 40-man that could actually still get cleared out. Like I could imagine Nick Gordon getting cleared out.
Oh man, really? I think Nick Gordon
or even Astudillo.
Well,
from a marketing standpoint alone.
Yeah, who cares about that?
They need cash, man. They need revenue.
Well, yeah. I mean, does the turtle actually move the needle that much on cash flow that you need to keep him around? Now obviously the flip side is some of those guys won't be removed from the roster until the non-tender deadline, which is after the Rule 5 deadline.
Well, yeah, but I mean, you're not going to put seven guys. You're not going to try to put seven guys on the 40-man right now.
Right. When I think about this list, if I were to add, I mean, if I were to add anyone after, I mean, I guess our discussion kind of comes down to, would you add Rortved or Wander Javier or both or neither? Because I think we're all in agreement on Blazevic. We're all in agreement on Bedu.
Right.
We're talking maybe a third person or maybe not. I guess if you ask me, I would go with Rortved first just because.
I think you'll slide Javier through. I don't think anyone's going to pick him up. I think you still want him on your team. I don't think anyone's going to try for him. I don't think Pittsburgh or any of those guys, but I don't think they're going to try for Rortved either.
Yeah.
How exactly do you think the lack of any sort of minor leagues is going to affect the Rule 5 this year? Is that going to increase picks, just people, you know, grabbing stuff in the dark, or is it going to, you know, depress the amount of actual claiming?
I really don't know.
I can see it going either way, you know, honestly, because Rule 5 picks are nice, cheap flyers to roll the dice on if you're a lower division team. But on the other hand, you're a year out. Like you said, you're a year out from any usable data or observation on any of them.
Yeah, you're a whole year out of any observation data on them. And plus all these guys that are going to be, you know, most of the time, all these guys that are available on the Rule 5 will have got 5 years of actual organized baseball under their belts. All these guys are going to have four. Not that that means a whole lot, but it's going to be a greener class. Whether or not that scares people away is another thing entirely. I mean, Rortved would have made it up to probably AA, maybe played some AAA if he had played in 2020.
Right.
So do you look at him as a AAA player, even though he hasn't really played any AAA then? It could go either way. There will be some sort of steal that actually, like, there will be more intrigue to it because there will be possibly players that will be on the Rule 5 that wouldn't normally be on the Rule 5 just because it's been a year and everything's in chaos.
But bringing it back to, are there any other names of players that you want to discuss briefly? I mean, I think we're pretty much.
I mean, he's got
that anybody below Wander Javier probably isn't likely to be protected anyway.
There's only four that are
Riho, Miranda, and just for the baseball name alone, Griffin Jacks.
Yeah, Griffin Jacks is a cool name, but I doubt he gets put on the roster.
Riho and who's the other guy they got from the Eduardo Escobar trade?
I don't think Riho was in the Eduardo Escobar trade.
No.
But go off, I guess.
He wasn't. Dude. He wasn't, but one of the guys that was, Riho is one of the guys that was traded for a different part of it, and he's up, but I don't think that matters all that much. One of the guys in the Eduardo Escobar trade that was semi-notable at the time was up as well. I don't know if that moves the needle enough, but...
Let me look at that trade. Ernie De La Trinidad, he is up, but I doubt he gets put on the roster.
Yeah, no, he's not going to get put on the roster.
I mean, Duran is already on the roster, so we don't have to worry about him.
Yeah, he's the only other one. Never mind.
Well, Gabriel Maciel, but I'm not sure he's even up.
Gabriel Maciel is the other one I was thinking of, and he's not. Okay. I don't think he really moves the needle enough either. No, yeah. I think it's the four guys, and I think those are the only four guys that would even potentially. Yeah, I guess I'd put Rodbet on.
I think if you really had to talk about a fifth, it would be Riho, but I don't think you would. I don't think there's reason to do that.
I mean,
I don't think anybody's going to take him.
I really don't either. You only really are going to put him on if you're worried that some team is going to potentially burden themselves with this guy for an entire season. And I don't see any way on earth that anyone picks up Luis Riho, who hasn't pitched an inning above A ball. Yeah, I don't think anyone's going to pick him up for an entire season.
Yeah.
Yeah. There we go. Your official half-baked analysis coming to you from the Wagon. Okay, so moving on from that, how do you feel about the Saints possibly becoming the new AAA affiliate for the Minnesota Twins?
Does that mean that Bill Murray doesn't own them anymore?
Ooh, that is a good question. I don't know how that works.
Because he used to hang out in the owner's box every once in a while. A friend of mine hung out with him in the owner's box once.
Wow.
This is a good time.
I mean, for convenience sake, that's actually kind of cool.
Humble like, brag.
Oh, hey, you got called up. We'll call you an Uber.
Proxy.
We'll call you an Uber, you know. That's kind of cool. The only thing is I always wanted to go see a Red Wings game because, we always wanted to do a Niagara trip. So less of a reason to do that.
The Red Wings might still exist.
Right.
They might, but hopefully they find some other affiliation.
It's nice to have some kind of personal connection to it, naturally.
True. I just hope the Saints keep doing all the crazy stuff they do at their games.
Yeah, the most important thing is that the Saints remain to some degree the Saints, or else it's just a name on a uniform.
And that is the biggest worry of mine, because I can definitely see that happening.
Yeah.
Getting all corporatized and such. Pete is so shocked by that point, I think he's frozen.
Pete's torn up about that part.
Hey. Welcome back. We only have a few minutes here, so why don't we go over our videos of the period
last period of
things. Dan, why don't you go first if you have something?
Sure. I want to talk about. I feel like every time I do something that's not surprising at all. No, I'm not going to talk about black gays metal. Although,
well, I hope Pete does.
Okay. Well, the video I have played that doesn't have any ratings yet is the last time I played The War on Drugs, playing a 13-minute version of Under the Pressure. So I want to talk about that. Drugs happen to be releasing a new live album next weekend on the 20th, which is supposed to be awesome because they curated it from like the last 5 or 6 years of their live shows, trying to find the best live performances of every song that they wanted to put on it on that album. Should be a pretty good listen with a lot of great heartland indie rock jamming in a vein that makes you think of Dire Straits, sort of, but not really, and that the War on Drugs style that apparently I've seen a lot of people talking about, lots of bands nowadays copying. Like everybody said that the Killers album was like really the Killers on drugs, you know,
like two or three songs maybe. but two or three songs were for sure
like, very
Oh, very, very much though.
Very war on drugs. So like the war on drugs are the happening thing now in indie rock, and they're getting to that stage where they're bigger than indie rock, honestly. So keep checking them out and go listen to Under the Pressure, because they're from Philadelphia and we love Pennsylvania. Go Eagles. Eagles suck.
Eagles suck
actually.
Pete, did you have one? If so, you can go ahead.
I always want to draw the spotlight to any and all black gays that gets played anytime ever. That video that Dan posted of Harakiri for the Sky on Sunday? Saturday. Quarter hour of a barrage of crazy guitars and a vocalist that I cannot believe he still has vocal cords. It's probably not the cup of tea of pretty much anyone on the site other than the two people that have already rated it, but
I was gonna say Cheap Toy was definitely behind that one.
And the guy who posted it.
Well, I assumed that
it's true, sometimes I do post things that I'm not actually into to see what kind of reaction it provokes, but not in this case.
No, they're probably my favorite artist of that particular style. I don't really know that you can call them true black gaze. Usually that has more post-rocky, dreamy elements, and there's not much dreaminess to that band. They did just do a song. They
have a new song. Album. Coming out soon, I think.
Well, yeah, they released a song with the guy from Alsay, so.
Oh yeah.
And that was a pretty good one. But I mean, the video you posted has two of their very best songs, so it's very good. It's very, very good. It's, no one is gonna like it, but it is very, very good.
Most of what I've been posting lately has been, you know, somewhat topical, which means I don't have too much personal connection to it, just, you know, want to fit the times. One I will highlight is the video from the 15th, which was the Rance Allen Group. Unfortunately, Rance Allen recently passed away, which is one of far too many RIP tags that we've had to put up this year. It is from the Wattstax concert, which took place in 72. It was to commemorate the 7th anniversary of the riots in Watts. But I played another video from it a few years back, Rufus Thomas, and just, I believe these are both from the same video from the concert, and it looks amazing, and I know I have to now go search out that video. Until I can hear the that we will wrap up this episode, this meandering episode. We promise we'll actually do some research next time. We'll come back to you soon with possible roster moves and trades and that kind of thing. And it's been great talking to you. There are visual cues you cannot see right now of thumbs up being given to our general audience. Have a safe Thanksgiving holiday.
Very safe.
Don't go anywhere if you don't have to.
Don't go anywhere even if you do have to.
That is also true. And in any case, wear a mask. We love you. See you soon, WGOM. This has been the Wook.